Hey guys, it's Elena.
And it's Candace.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. Finally got some new equipment.
Well.
Thank you, Candace.
Yes, I took a bow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hopefully we don't sound like we're on another planet underwater anymore.
Yeah.
So here we go.
So first things first, tell me what you've been up to. I mean, I know Hazel had her birthday party.
Yes.
Were you worn out?
I was so worn out. My whole body hurts. And I was like, why? Physicality is not my forte, but I remembered I was making those balloon things, like those balloon
decorations. Yeah.
And I was like up and down hanging those and sitting on the floor and, you know, in weird positions. And I don't know. Also, I got this balloon pump.
Oh, if only you could see her action right now.
It's kind of as hard as blowing the balloon yourself.
Oh, so just...
But oh my gosh, the workout I was getting.
Like a shake weight.
No, because so you're using both hands, but yeah, it was like, oh, and I'm here to report that all three of my kids have had blue poop.
Oh, that blue icing was something else.
It was so funny. I picked the girls up from school and the twins teacher said, just so you know, they've been pooping like all day and it's blue. She's like, did they have blue icing yesterday? I was like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. And Hazel's was blue too. Sorry to tell y'all that. Yeah. But I just wanted y'all to know that if you eat blue icing,
you're going to have blue poop.
Yeah. I didn't look at the color of mine today.
Oh, yeah.
That's too bad. That was a missed opportunity.
Lord.
My daughter turned 4. I'm 5 talking about poop.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, it was fun. I was really happy to have everybody there. And I don't know. Just
Hazel
so
did so good having everybody at her birthday party.
She did. She's come a long way in the a little over a month that we've been here.
Yeah, she's loving the family.
Yes, and I knew she would. And that's kind of how I thought it would be when we arrived.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like it would just, everything would be like that. But she had a pretty hard time adjusting. But yeah, she loves school now. She's so excited when people come over. It's great. So yeah, it was so much fun.
Well, good.
Did you have fun?
I had fun at the party.
Good.
I thought it was a really fun birthday party. Like,
yeah.
You know, you go to birthday parties and they're like, they last forever. And you're like, when are they going to open the presents? And when are we going to have cake?
Well, I kind of forgot about the cake.
You're like, oh, the cake.
I was like, oh. And then someone said, was it you who said, do you want her to open her presents? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, yeah. And then I was like, oh, my gosh, and I have a cake. It was like from 1 to 3. And for some reason, I thought it was already 3 and I hadn't pulled the cake out, but it was only 2:30. So,
but you were good at keeping things along and you had games for the kids. Yeah. And that was, I liked it.
Yeah, I thought it was fun.
Yeah.
And the girls had a good time. Hazel had a whale of a time, you might say. Her birthday party was ocean themed, guys.
Yeah.
So please enjoy my puns.
Yeah. And Candace asked me to fix the twins' hair right before the party. And she's like, just put it up, like up high on their head. I'm like, okay. So I put it up in a ponytail, and their ponytail were like sprouts, but it was like a whale spout.
Yeah, like a blowhole.
And so it went with the theme, okay?
Yeah, it was good. They looked very cute. Thank you, Aunt Lena.
I could have done better. Okay, do y'all want to hear about true crime?
Let's do it.
Enough about Candace.
I know, enough about happiness.
Okay, so There is a national awareness of this case. However, I have not heard of it until one of our listeners, Brenda, messaged me, or she messaged us. No, not your mom, Brenda. Candace. Yeah. So, Brenda, thank you for the case suggestion. So, this family has made it their mission to keep the investigators looking at this case. So, it is unsolved and ongoing. It has been 28 years of dead ends. 28 years.
That's tough.
Yeah. It was August 12th of 1995 at the Heartland Apartments near Salt Lake City, Utah. Loween Tapia and her husband Roberto Tapia went out on a date. Loween asked Emo, one of her older daughters, to babysit the three younger kids while they went out. Emo was 18 at the time and had just moved out of the apartments. She stayed close and would still come over and hang out and have family time. Anyway, their parents left the apartment around dinner time and then were going to dance the night away.
Nice.
Dance the night away. Shortly after they left, Emo took Rosie, her younger sister, to the playground at the apartment complex. Rosie Tapia was 6 years old, born on January 17th, 1989. She was a kindergartner at Mountain View Elementary School. She had two older half-sisters, Emilia, who they called Emo,
aww,
and Esmeralda, and two younger siblings that were four-year-old twins.
Aww.
Yeah, so she was smack dab in the middle.
Bless her mother.
Yeah. She was a really shy and sweet little girl with the cutest little smile. And she was one of the teacher's favorites.
Oh, bless.
Some of these things that, some of the things that she loved to do was sing, art, ride her bike, play Barbies, Nintendo. She liked watching Rescue 911.
Is she me as a child?
I know, right?
Rescue 911. I used to watch that all the time with my parents. And it's funny because I want to watch stuff like that. But when the kids are around, I'm like, oh, I can't watch that. But I'm like, my parents watched that when I was
growing. Yeah, I was exposed.
That's probably why I'm so into it.
Yeah, yeah. So all those shows, that's what got us started, right?
Yes.
But so she was into that. And so she said she wanted to be a police officer when she grew up. And another thing that she loved to do was go play at the playground. So Emilia walked Rosie to the playground, and then about 7 p.m. walked back to the apartment to tend to the twins.
Oh, by herself?
I guess she left the twins, from what it sounds like, she left the twins at the apartment, took Rosie to the playground. I don't know if it was a straight shot, like if you could see the playground. I'll post a picture of it, but nonetheless, she left Rosie at the playground, went to the apartment. So about 15 minutes went by, and Emilia heard a knock at the door. When she opened the door, a man was carrying Rosie in his arms and told her that Rosie had got hurt on the slide. And so he's like, oh, you might need to tend to her. She got hurt. And so this guy, he was a thin white man and was wearing dark sunglasses and a ball cap. She didn't recognize him.
But he knew where they lived.
Right.
Okay.
Good question. So Emilia was like, okay, thank you. And she brought Rosie inside and the man said, bye, Rosie. And the door shut.
Okay. I don't like this at all.
Or yeah. So Emilia asked Rosie what exactly happened, and Rosie said, nothing. I didn't get hurt. I don't know what he's talking about. And she didn't know why the guy brought her home, and she wasn't even sure how he knew her name because she never told him her name.
Ew.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
I mean, speculation is...
she heard her say the name and maybe...
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't remember. I mean, just as an adult, if I heard a child's name being called out, unless it was applicable to me or I knew somebody with that name, I wouldn't remember and then call the child by its name. But
right.
I'm not a creepy guy with sunglasses. Whatever else he was wearing.
Very interesting. So even though this was weird, they went ahead and went about their evening in the apartment. And around 9 p.m., Amelia put the kids to bed. And Louine and Roberto got home around 2 a.m.
Okay.
Louine went to check on her little babies before she went to sleep. She gave them all a kiss, careful not to wake them. Before walking out, she noticed that the window was open, so she closed it. She didn't let the window close all the way because she didn't want it to make a loud noise and wake up the babies from their sweet dreams. So she just shut it gently, but didn't latch it.
Oh, I don't like it, Lena. This is making me feel sick.
I know. I had a hard time with this. I didn't want to do this case. She left the bedroom door halfway open in case any of them got up. She could hear them or whatnot. At around 4:30 a.m., Louine woke up. Just woke up. She just had a gut feeling mm-hmm. something was not right. Mm-hmm. So she went to check on the kids. As she approached the bedroom, she realized that the bedroom door was all the way closed. She was like, that's weird. I know I left it open. She walked into the room and saw that Rosie was not in bed. She checked to see if she was in the bathroom, and she did not find her in there. The window that she had shut a few hours earlier was open, and the curtains were on the floor.
No.
Oof. She then woke up Roberto and Amelia to help her look for Rosie. They searched the house and went outside screaming her name. At 5 a.m., Louine called police. News traveled quickly, and family and friends came to help search for her as well. Posters and flyers were quickly made to aid in the search, and this family, I mean, they didn't play around or waste time.
No, I wouldn't.
No. So initially, the police were saying that she probably just walked out and left the house on her own, like...
Right.
Because like she's six and mm-hmm. has somewhere to go.
That's what six-year-olds do.
But evidence clearly showed that something more ominous than that had happened. Yeah.
Ugh.
So the screen on the window had bent, or it was bent, indicating that the screen had been pried off, and there was a clear shoe print on a towel that was laying on the dresser in front of the window. And just to explain better, the window was at basement level, so when the person climbed in, they had to step down onto the dresser that was in front of the window.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So police asked the twins, the four-year-old twins, if they heard or saw anything. And, they were like, did you wake up and see anybody? And they both said no. Police thought that Rosie must have known the abductor since no one heard a scream or a ruckus going on. Although there is one person that's reported that heard a scream. I don't know what time or what.
Oh, okay.
So the big question here, who is this man who brought Rosie home?
Yes.
Now, there was a man that was seen often at the playground. He would sit on the bench and play his guitar and watch the kids play.
No.
Maybe it was him.
Did he have a child?
Well... many eyewitnesses said that he did not have a child, that he was seen there often just playing the guitar with no child there. Mm-hmm. But this man was found and questioned, and he confirmed that he did have a son of his own that played at the park. So it wasn't like he was just watching random kids play. He also had an alibi and he wasn't even home in that area till late that night. So he couldn't have been the sketchy man that brought Rosie home from the park. Hmm. There was a composite sketch done of the man with the ball cap and sunglasses, but this sketch didn't come out till 2010. Now, I don't think my looks have changed much in 15 years. I mean, maybe some wrinkles around the eyes. But in 15 years, this man probably does not look the same.
Right.
The Deseret News announced that detectives wanted to talk to this man. And so they described him as white but dark complected.
He's darker in the summer.
He has a tan. Okay. He's around 30 years old, about 5'9", with dark brown, medium length hair. And he was wearing a white t-shirt, a red brimmed ball cap, and sunglasses with dark brown lenses. Pretty okay. basic.
Yeah.
And the sketch.
I saw that guy at the grocery store the other day.
Yeah, so the sketch is pretty basic too. Yeah. I'll post it as well, but maybe somebody might say, yeah. Oh, I know that guy.
I knew a guy that looked just like that in 2000, whatever.
1995.
2010.
Yeah. So a lot of the tenants at these apartments had a criminal history, come to find out.
Oh.
There had been suspicious activity around the area already.
Sure.
When neighbors were interviewed, one woman said that her daughter was nearly abducted just a year ago. There was no elaboration, but she said since then she had been extra careful, locking doors, windows, and not letting her kids play outside by themselves.
I would move, though. Like, I would just move.
Yeah.
Did she report this? Do we know?
No elaboration, that? No like...
Oh, she just said, oh, and by the way, my child was almost abducted. Yeah. Oh, wow.
So another woman said that her daughter just a week before Rosie, her daughter was taken and sexually assaulted, but she made it back home alive.
I'm sorry?
There is no police report.
I don't understand.
Yeah. She says that she did report it to the apartment complex manager.
I'm sorry. What's he going to do?
This person, don't know if it was a man or a woman, they said to keep it quiet.
Okay. Yeah. Don't tell anyone because
we don't want to.
Occupancy's at an all-time low. And we're running a rent special right now. Gotta get those people in the door.
Yeah, don't freak anybody out. Just keep it quiet.
That is appalling.
Well, and you know, because this was kept quiet, there was no alarm for Rosie's mom to actually latch the window shut.
Exactly. Or even let her play at the playground by herself.
Right. Ugh. So, yeah, I mean, I hate to accuse, but maybe this apartment management had something to do with it. That's just speculation on my part.
That could check out. I mean, you've got multiple attempts. It was either someone who lived there or someone always in the area.
Right. So did they know somebody that could have done this and they were trying to hide it? That's, you know, that's one of the first questions that I had when I heard that this management was like, oh, keep it quiet. So also something to note is that no one other than the family and close friends knew that Rosie was sleeping in that bedroom.
Oh.
Yeah. That room used to be Amelia's bedroom, and Rosie and the twins just moved into that room when Amelia moved out.
Okay.
So just about 5 hours after she was reported missing, a man named Gustavo Ibarra was walking his dog on a path next to the Jordan Canal, which was within walking distance of the apartment complex. He saw that, or what he thought was a large doll with black hair floating in the water.
No.
It was, in fact, Rosie's body. And she was still wearing her pajamas.
Oh, Jesus.
Police canvassed the area with dogs, you know, smelling where she might have went into the canal. Because, you know, they speculated that her body drifted where they found her. They didn't find any clues. There have been reports that they tried to get DNA from under her nails. But the reports that I've read, they have not been able to get a good read because I guess the water contaminated the DNA.
Yeah. And there's probably not much. And they don't want to consume the DNA.
Right.
Oh, yeah. It's rough.
So the autopsy showed that Rosie had blunt force trauma and she was raped. And
sicko.
And the cause of death was drowning.
Oh my God.
I know. Rosie's family has been relentless in following up with the police often. They haven't given up a lot of information as far as what they have, like DNA, like how much DNA do they have, if they have any, or names of suspects. They give like scenarios of suspects, but they don't give names. Mm-hmm. The police did pull fingerprints off of the window, but it's not clear if they were able to get a full print. Like, we don't know. Partial, full. There have been rumors that Amelia had a party that night of the murder, and several people were there at the apartment. And just maybe one of those partygoers could have come back after learning the layout of the house. But Amelia adamantly denied these accusations. She's like, there was no party. I did not have people over. Yeah. So I don't know who
would have said something like that.
Right. Huh. Amelia ended up passing away in April of 2020 due to natural causes. She was 43 at the time. And Loween asked her while she was at the hospital if there was anything that she needed to tell her, like, is there anything that you've been keeping or anything that you could remember? And Amelia just shook her head no. Like,
that is so hard. Can you imagine being her mom and being like, I feel like maybe she could tell me more, and having to ask her on her deathbed?
I know. And that's one of the last conversations that you're going to have with her. And
so rough.
I know. And Louine's like, I have to believe my daughter. Like, she says, no, I have to believe her. She's like, but I just wonder if there was something that she didn't want to tell me.
Yeah. Like, she had someone over that she wasn't supposed to. Is that what she thinks?
Something maybe? Like that. Or I'll give a little more information in a little bit, but because the police speculated a lot on Amelia, like,
really?
Just because
how old was she?
18.
Okay.
But I'll get into that in a minute. But while questioning the family, they were asked if they knew anyone that could have done this. And there was a family friend who had a young son around Rosie's age. And so this family friend knew that Rosie was sleeping in this specific bedroom and was accused of acting strangely during the search for Rosie. It was said that just before reaching the point where Rosie was found, he insisted that they go no further.
Huh?
I don't know if he's like, we've gone a really far walk. Like, she's not going to be down here. Let's go back. I don't know what he was saying, but there was like this sense of urgency. Like, we don't need to go any further.
Wow.
So this man was questioned, and his wife proved his alibi that he was home all night with her. The apartment complex made a plan of action to get new locks on the windows and get better lighting through the units, and even overnight patrol. Like, the neighbors were all around, like, gathered together in, you know, this big area together, and they're just like, we need security, we need, and so the police were there doing their, you know, trying to make them feel comfortable, and so the apartment complex agreed to do all of that. Police interviewed hundreds of the neighbors and nothing came of it. So here are some things that make you go,
let's hear them.
So could they be a connection? Could they be coincidence? You can tell me.
Okay, I will tell you.
Okay. In 1986 in Nevada, so what? That's 9 years before Rosie's murder.
I believe you. I'm not about to do math on my own time.
So this is in Nevada, which is a neighboring state of Utah. April Marie Rhodes was also kidnapped from her bed. She was raped and her body found in a storage room.
Jesus.
This case went cold until July of 2013. Jasper Goddard, a 61-year-old sex offender, was arrested on a routine traffic stop. Lo and behold, he had an arrest warrant out for him because his DNA, already uploaded in CODIS, was a match to the DNA found on April Rhodes' body.
Wow.
It's unclear if investigators ever compared DNA to Rosie's case to be able to link him to Rosie or not. I'm going to guess probably not, since the DNA was supposedly contaminated.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but this...
Well, maybe they could get a partial.
Right. There's got to be something.
I just feel like...
There's got to be something. I know. So this case was about a six-hour drive from Rosie's mm-hmm. case. But I don't think it's that far-fetched to think that this man could have made a trip to that area, did the crime, and then drove back home, wherever home was for him.
Mm-hmm. Under a bridge with the trolls.
He later admitted and pled guilty to April Rhodes' murder, and he ended up dying of natural causes while awaiting sentencing.
Good, though. Bye.
Hmm. In West Jordan, Utah, June 26th of 2012, same area as Rosie 17 years later, 6-year-old Sierra Newbold was taken from her home as the family slept. A security camera caught the kidnapping in action at 3:13 a.m.
Wow.
A man walked through the sliding glass door, leaving the house. He was apparently carrying something. Kathy Newbold called police around 7:30 a.m. after she noticed the sliding door was open. And then she discovered her daughter was not in her bed. Sierra was later found in the Jordan Canal.
Oh, my God.
And also was beaten, raped, and drowned. Just like Rosie.
No.
A man named Terry Lee Black was arrested and convicted of Sierra's murder. This man had gone on, I guess what you can call a crime spree. 3 days after Sierra's murder, Terry stole a Jeep Grand Cherokee from the Deseret Industries parking lot. The vehicle's owner told her boss about the stolen vehicle. Terry went into the Wells Fargo bank and attempted to rob the bank. I think he walked out with $100.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good for you.
So you can call it being in the right place at the right time, or you can call it what the police chief called it, divine intervention. So the boss who was told about the stolen vehicle was at the bank at the same time to make a deposit. She was sitting in her car in the parking lot, and she saw her employee's missing Jeep in the parking lot.
Weird.
Yeah, she's like, hey.
Whoa.
So when Terry came out of the bank, the boss told him, get away from that car.
Hey, you. Gosh, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
But also brave.
Bold, right? Yes. Yeah. So Terry just walked away. Like, he's like, oh.
He's like, oh, I wasn't.
No.
I wasn't going. That's not mine. Huh? I wasn't going to go into that car.
Yeah. Oh, that's not my car.
No. No.
Yeah. So he walks away, and the woman took a picture of him with her cell phone.
Amazing.
When Terry was stopped by police, they learned that he lived in an apartment complex near the canal where Sierra's body was found. He clearly had not changed his clothes and was stinky.
Gross.
From all accounts, everybody that, you know, the teller at the bank, she, you know. Yeah, he didn't change his clothes, didn't clean himself in several days. When arrested, he had dirt and soot on his hands and knees that matched to the evidence in the field where Sierra's clothes were found.
Wow.
Also, that field and a couple of homes had been burned just days before Sierra's murder.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, hence the soot.
Yeah.
Terry's DNA was also a match to the DNA on Sierra's body. Her parents did recognize him. He had visited at the same church as the Newbold family.
Ew.
Yeah, they said he wasn't an actual member, but he did visit there a couple times. So Terry Black did live close to where Rosie's murder happened and Sierra's. And he was considered as a suspect in Rosie's case, actually, when he was arrested for Sierra's. But he was ruled out because his wife told police that they lived in Arizona in 1995 when Rosie was murdered.
Okay. Did they?
They did. Arizona, though, is also a neighboring state to Utah. Right. It would probably be like a 7-hour drive, I think.
Okay.
They didn't move to West Jordan, Utah till 1998. So now they're living there mm-hmm. in 1998. So these cases just had way too many similarities.
Yeah.
Just like that guy, Jasper Goddard, I don't think it's far-fetched that Terry Black could have been living in Arizona, made a trip to West Jordan in 1995, and murdered Rosie and then drove back to Arizona. Then 3 years later, he in 1998, he's like, hey, you know what, wifey? Let's move to West Jordan, Utah.
Yeah.
Because he has ties there. Exactly. He has a connection.
Well, and that was going to be my question, because maybe he was in town visiting someone
mm-hmm.
he already knew there.
Maybe.
And she didn't remember when that trip actually was.
Right.
Or maybe they didn't tell her. Maybe they just gave her the year and she's like, oh, we didn't live anywhere near there.
Right. But maybe any loving wife will be like, not my husband.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know how deep the questioning went. There's so much that is just left unsaid in this case. And it's frustrating, but I feel like they want to leave that.
Yeah, they have to withhold some
right
things. And I totally respect that. But like, don't withhold it from us.
Like, we need to know. Yeah.
We need to know.
Us armchair detectives exactly. can help you figure this out.
Right. Exactly.
So, yeah.
I feel like there should be civilian task force. Task forces. That was really hard for me. But like, we can sign, you know, paperwork,
mm-hmm.
confidentiality paperwork or whatever. And we can help them work cases. Like, we can volunteer for it.
Okay.
And, you know, who knows? Like, I'm pretty street smart.
Yeah.
Maybe you have, and I'm a girl,
mm-hmm.
if you didn't know. I go by she, her pronouns.
Oh my gosh. So
I'm just thinking maybe I could bring something to the table that a bunch of crotchety old guys who are working a case, you know what I mean? Who probably weren't even the original detectives or investigators on the case.
Mm-hmm.
I just think maybe I could bring something to the table.
So there is a private investigator that's for the family, Jason Jensen, and I'll talk about him in a minute, but he is with this cold case coalition.
Okay.
But he is...
A coalition. That's what I need to be a part of.
Yeah. So I've heard that he's very responsive
mm-hmm.
and like he just answers his cell phone anytime. Okay. I don't know if that's still true. I did think about calling him, but, I'm sure he has lots of cases to do, but, anyway,
that's really cool.
He sounds like a really,
just like down to earth.
Yeah. Like a go-getter guy. Yeah. So maybe he can help figure this out.
Okay.
I think he's really trying. Anyway, so there was a witness in the apartment complex that said the night of Rosie's murder at around, it was like between 3 and 5 a.m., he said he was out standing in front of his apartment, like on his porch. He saw a white truck parked down by the canal. He watched the truck make a U-turn, and then he saw what looked like a teenage boy walking up from the pathway by the canal.
Okay.
This guy was about 16 to 18 years old and thin. He thought the boy was wearing two-toned pants, like light-colored on top, and then the bottom of the pant leg a dark blue.
Like Umbros?
Maybe.
I mean, it was the day.
Yeah. But he did realize that the pants were darker on the bottom because they were wet.
Oh.
Like he had been in the water.
Okay. That would raise my eyebrows. Mm-hmm.
So this teenage boy was wearing a white tank top and a gold chain around his neck and had his hair slicked back.
Okay. I got a visual just then.
This witness had tried to tell police about what he saw, but no one would really listen to him. Investigators did question him to get his story, but the detective showed him a couple of the composite sketches that they had to see if he agreed that it might be the same person that they are suspecting. The witness told him, no, the guy that I saw is much younger, and so he felt that detectives didn't really want to listen any longer because they were solely looking for this playground guy.
Yeah. And they, I feel like investigators, sometimes they go down a path so far and they put a lot of work into something and they feel like they get this hunch that they're on the right track.
Right.
And to
turn around and think of something else.
That,
yeah.
And go down a whole new avenue. Yeah, that's tough.
I mean, I guess that's why they do those boards with pictures and
string
everywhere to
almost like a genealogy, like a family tree going down each suspect.
Yeah, I'm sure solving a case, especially like this, so difficult.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
But yeah, he didn't feel like they wanted to go down that road. So years later, the witness spoke to a news station about what he saw. In 2019, a sketch artist got in touch with this man.
Mm-hmm.
And so this artist made a sketch of who this witness saw. When talking about the sketch, the witness said that the closeness of what the man looked like versus the sketch is 8 out of 10. Like, it's close.
Yeah.
The witness was asked to pick this man from a photo lineup, and these photos were apparently compiled from a series of tips from the public.
Okay.
And he was able to point out the man that he saw.
Oh. Who was that?
I don't know. I don't have a name.
What?
I didn't see any report of who this guy might have been, but apparently I did read one report that said this man that was pointed out was known to Rosie's family.
Okay.
I don't know.
So definitely something we should be looking at.
Yeah. Did they question him? I don't know. I didn't see anything about it other than that.
Composite sketches like that long ago. I can't tell you what someone from 20 years ago looked like.
Yeah, 2019.
20 years ago. And I could tell you what they look like now because I've seen their Facebook pictures and I'm like,
yeah,
whoa.
Exactly.
But I can't remember what they used to look like.
No, I know. Like when you see people in high school and you're like, oh, I remember that person.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, that's not what I remember them looking like. Not at all.
No.
So, yeah.
That's just so not helpful, I feel like.
I know.
I mean, I guess they're trying anything, but.
Yeah. I mean, maybe somebody's memory will be jogged about, oh, there was that one guy.
Yeah.
Oh, he was wearing a gold chain and, a white tank top. I don't know.
I feel like if you were in a gold chain,
that late at night, you always wear that gold chain, you know?
Right? That's a great point, Candace.
I just think if you're wearing a gold chain that late at night, you wear a gold chain all the time. I don't know.
What do you got to look that spiffy for? See, this is
the stuff I could bring to the table.
Yeah.
And I'm bringing it to the table.
You are. We are sitting at the table. We are not in the closet. In the
closet. We came out of the closet.
So, yeah. I think we don't give ourselves credit for, like, why not just go for it and start our own private investigative.
I mean, I talked about us being old ladies doing it, but you did. Why wait?
Why wait till then? Wait. I hear it's a really dangerous job.
Yeah, but I laugh in the face of danger. I think you and I have just a lot of time on our hands.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And so why not add one more thing?
Yeah, we can do it. I mean, who has time for sleep?
Someone said to me the other day, they're like, so what do you do? And I was like, where do I start? All of it. I do all the things. Like you do. Every single thing.
You do. You've got your hand in the pot.
Yeah. I've got both hands in the pot. And yeah. So let's do it.
Why not? I would have to quit my full-time job.
Yeah, well, let's do it. Me too. I'll just give my kids away.
Yeah. I'll take them. But then I won't have time.
I know. And then we'll be right back where we started.
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe we could divvy them up. Shared custody?
You take them for the weekend so I can go on this stakeout.
Yeah.
No, but we have to do it together.
No, we have to do it together.
Okay, I'm sorry, Rosie. I'm getting back to your case. Back to Rosie. There was this guy, Danny Woodland. He was a previous boyfriend to Amelia, Rosie's sister.
Okay.
Remember
back to Amelia.
Yeah, see? Remember I told you that earlier that Amelia used to stay in the bedroom where Rosie was taken out of?
Yes.
When Amelia stayed in that room, Danny would sneak in through that same window. I know what you're thinking. It was Danny.
Yeah.
But the composite sketch of the teenage boy didn't look like Danny, but the sketch did look like a friend of Danny's.
Okay.
Danny had a friend that would drive him and drop him off at Amelia's apartment, and he would watch as Danny would climb through the window. This friend had been in the apartment in the past. Danny said, that when they heard that there was a new sketch of a teenager that was possibly connected to the case, this friend called Danny and said, it would be funny if the sketch looked like one of us.
Why would that be funny?
I don't know.
I don't think that's funny.
No. So when the public did finally get to see the sketch in 2019, Danny texted his friend and was like, this sketch looks like you, dude.
Wow.
And the friend was like, he immediately called Danny and was like, no, it doesn't. It looks like you.
Wow. So one of the things I was going to ask was, so the guy said his hair was slicked back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if his hair was slicked back because he got in the water.
Right.
Like maybe he got wet and just kind of pulled, you know, ran his fingers through his hair and slicked his hair back.
I thought the same thing.
And maybe that was just a circumstantial thing and he didn't like wear it that way.
That's a good point.
Okay.
That wasn't a normal look for him.
Right.
Who knows if he was the same guy that was wearing a hat earlier in the day.
Right. Maybe it's not the same guy. Maybe that was a totally weird
freak thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So fingers are being pointed. But I don't know what came of it.
What?
Even later in 2015, the twin brother said he actually did see a man in the room, and the man had a beard, but he didn't know the man, and the man told him to go back to sleep. So, like, can we do a lineup of these possibilities and see if he can remember, like, point somebody out? Maybe that did happen. I don't know. But there is speculation that he didn't really see this man. Like, maybe he was trying so hard to remember something that, like, his psyche.
And how old was he when he said he remembered this?
Let's see. He was 4 in 1995. Mm-hmm. This is in 2015.
Wow.
Yeah.
So we have what are called flashbulb memories.
Okay.
And it's like something very memorable. Like, let me just use 9/11, for instance. I can tell you in detail where I was, what happened. However, some of those memories are not mine because over the years, I've filled in the gaps of some, you know, that the day, like, for instance, when we saw the plane hit the tower, we didn't know what was going on. There was just confusion.
Right.
You know, we then learn what happened. But in my mind's eye, I can remember that whole day as the terrorists, you know, hit the tower and the plane. Da, 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 da.
Right.
So I can tell you in detail. So I'm wondering if over his lifespan, if he's learned things or seen enough composite sketches, maybe had a dream at one point.
Right.
And he's gone back in time and said, I think I do remember something.
Right. He put this memory there or. But none of the composite sketches are of a man with a beard. So where did this come from?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting. And I
just wonder, maybe somebody said something like, did he have a beard?
Right.
Did he have dark hair? And he was asked a series of questions. Maybe he was asked a series of questions at 4 years old.
Okay.
And now he's remembering some of the questions or, you know what I mean? 4 years old.
I know. It breaks my heart.
Ugh.
Because you know he wants to know. He wants to help.
I know. I can't even.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
So that's really sad. Police say that they have always believed that Amelia had something to do with it, like I said earlier.
Wow.
Or knew something about what happened. I don't know why she would have taken it to her grave. She had that one last chance to come clean and tell her mom, and she said nothing.
I don't know why anyone would think anyone else was more important than their little sister.
Right.
And figuring out what happened to them.
Right. And she even went on news stations and, you know, like pleading for answers.
Wow.
As far as having something to do with it, though, it could have been that she was the intended target, not that she actually had something to do with it.
Right.
So Amelia had ties to the 21st Street Gang.
Whoa. Didn't expect you to say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they lived in the area and they may have wanted to harm Amelia, but found Rosie instead. I don't know.
Amelia didn't live there.
She didn't live there. Like, she just moved out like a month before.
Wow.
And there was even people saying that this gang even wanted to hurt Amelia even after Rosie's murder. So
jeez.
Were they out to get her? I don't know. I feel like if she knew they were out to get her, she would have told the police something.
Or maybe not.
Maybe.
Because she was scared of them.
Right.
Maybe it was she kept her mouth shut because of that.
Yeah.
And maybe she didn't admit it to her mother because she was scared that they would come after her. Someone else in the family.
Lord. I don't know.
I don't know much about gangs, but I will say that the cases I have learned about gangs, they're not so much interested in children. I mean,
but they don't care either. Like, they have.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. They,
you know, they're sending a message, basically.
Sending a message, or it's their initiation. Go do a home invasion. Mm-hmm. Oh, and on a whim, maybe they see this child laying there. You know,
that's horrific.
It is.
That's
people do this.
That is just, I cannot. That's beyond my comprehension.
Right. Yeah. It's disgusting. So back to Jason Jensen, the private investigator for the family. He was looking for members of the gang to confirm these allegations to get their side of the story, but I'm not sure if he was able to do that. I think that was back in 2019 that he was barking up that tree.
Wow.
Also, shortly after Rosie was buried at the Salt Lake City Cemetery, someone left a Barbie doll on her grave. I think a few other things were left, but like this Barbie doll was very interesting.
Okay.
Her family has kept that Barbie doll at their home in a glass case preserved since that time.
Wow.
The Utah Cold Case Coalition said that there are two possible people of interest in the case that have been identified who have some fixation with Barbies. A report from 2019 said that they had arranged for DNA to be gathered from the doll to hopefully help solve the case. So I'm not sure if one of the people that were of interest was a suspect from the JonBenet Ramsey case.
What?
Okay, Colorado is next to also Utah. Next to,
and Texas and South Carolina are also next to
you.
No. I'm just saying you can drive. Okay.
You can drive. Okay, no, but really, all these states are surrounding Utah. Right. So Colorado, JonBenet Ramsey was, Colorado. So
don't start me on that
apparently,
case.
I know. My head hurts. But apparently two Barbie dolls with duct tape were found around the area of her home. So fixation with Barbies.
That's just sick.
Yeah. I don't know.
People are messed up.
Yeah. That is not even part of the police reports or investigation, I don't think. That's just something that I read like from a web sleuth.
Yeah.
So.
But it's interesting because when you're talking about criminology and you're looking for a criminal
mind,
a criminal's behavioral profile, maybe they're not the same person, but maybe that pathology would be of interest. You would want to know who you're dealing with.
Exactly. Yeah. Good point. They also reached out through the news just asking if someone would just come forward and say, I know who left the Barbie there, or, oh, hey, I'm the one that left the Barbie there. No harm, no foul. Like just a sentiment. If it was really just a kind gesture, just come forward
just
and say
that.
Right. Due to the Barbie being kept in this glass case, it potentially preserved the DNA of the person who placed it on the grave. In 2019, they said they were able to extract DNA from the Barbie.
Whoa.
Yeah, but I have not been able to find anything saying if they actually tested the DNA.
Well, do they have a Barbie to compare it to? You said they took DNA from the Barbie? This case is making me literally want to vomit, and I'm sorry, but I had to crack a joke because I seriously, this makes me feel sick.
I know.
It makes me feel so sick, and I feel like they were so onto something like five different times.
Yeah.
And they were just like, well, nothing came of that, so.
Yeah.
Oh, but it's 2010. Let's do another composite sketch.
Yeah.
And then in 9 years, let's do another one. Mm-hmm. And then
maybe test some DNA. Maybe not. Yeah. I don't know.
And so, it's unsolved. You already told me that. So
it is. I was talking to Chris about it whenever I was researching it. I'm like, there's no answers. And it's driving me crazy.
I know.
I mean, I could only imagine how her mother feels.
I just don't know what I would do. And she has other kids to live for. Yeah. I just can't even imagine that.
So there is a Facebook page called Who is Rosie Tapia's Killer, where you can find more information if you'd like. I don't know who runs it, but there is a reward also of $100,000 for the information that helps solve the case. The reward has been put together by the Salt Lake City Police Department and Jason Jensen. Each time the case gets put back into the public eye, new information seems to come to light and they feel that they are closer to the whole truth. So, yeah, anyone with information about the case is encouraged to contact Salt Lake City Police at 801-799-4636. Or you can contact Jason Jensen at 877-648-8046 or 801-596-2455.
Someone come forward. Like, give this family some peace. It doesn't matter if you think your information won't be helpful. Let the police decide that.
Right.
Someone knows something.
Yeah.
Somebody knows something.
Yeah. I mean, the white truck and the teenager, like, were they working together?
The gold chain.
Was the playground guy driving the white truck? I don't know.
Was the playground guy sitting out there and saw some creep and said, I'm going to pretend like this little girl got hurt and take her back to her apartment?
Yeah.
Because I saw where they just came from and that was totally innocent. That was totally innocent. Or maybe he is the guy.
Yeah. But the whole thing was weird with that. Cause she was like, I didn't tell him my name. I didn't tell him where I lived. Like, yeah, what?
That is
I never got hurt on this slide.
Curious.
Yeah.
That is very curious.
I'm still confused all of this information.
I'm more confused because sometimes I feel like most of the time I'm like, oh yeah, I know what happened here. Right. Like, it was probably that guy, but I'm so confused. I don't even know.
Mm-mm.
And I can't imagine how police feel because
right.
Like
this
I
has
said,
to pull at their gut.
Yeah. And we spend 2 weeks working on a case,
mm-hmm.
and we get attached to it in a way, and we take it home with us in a way,
mm-hmm.
and there are cases that I can't stop thinking about, like the
right.
Blue Mound Massacre. That was our first case, mm-hmm. and I've never forgotten it. I cannot forget it.
Right.
I mean, I drive through Blue Mound to get here.
Yeah.
Like, I literally drive through that town to come to your house.
Yeah.
This is our home. Like, that, I can't let that go. And that really has nothing to do with me. So
right.
I cannot imagine how the investigators feel, how her family feels.
Right.
I pray that someday something happens.
Yeah.
And,
that's exactly what I did. As I was researching this, I just had to stop a few times and just pray that God would lead these people to the answers,
yeah.
Or somebody would just feel conviction in their heart and have to just come forward.
You know how when sometimes you hear about like a cold case detective and he's like, it was there all along in the file.
Yeah.
And I just came across it. And you know what a pair of fresh eyes could do
right.
for a case. Maybe there's something already there
right.
that they need to relook at.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they need me
and
to help.
Yeah.
You to help.
And me. Like, don't forget about me.
Oh,
but
my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, Jason Jensen might have all the files. So let's reach out to him. Jason, if you want our expertise.
Jason, we're here to help.
Yeah. Message us, man.
Yeah. Holla.
Yeah.
Well, I feel sick now, so I'm gonna.
Can we turn it around to what we're thankful for? Yeah. Can we transition in that way? We can try.
Sweet Rosie.
Yeah.
We actually almost named Poppy Rosie.
Oh.
Daniel really loved that name, but I won because Poppy was on my list for Hazel, actually. But
maybe for the next one.
Oh. So, Rosie, I know you're just in heaven right now.
Yeah.
Living your
best with that sweet little smile. Oh my gosh.
You're just probably like riding a unicorn.
Yeah.
Right now under a rainbow with glitter just floating all around.
No.
I'm so sorry that that happened to her.
Yeah. Rest in peace, little girl.
Yes. Rest in peace, Rosie. Okay, what are you thankful for? Let's try and turn this around.
Okay. So, yeah, each week I've said like chapstick or whatever, but
hey, I'm really thankful for chapstick because I just had to apply. I was really chapped.
But no, I really am thankful for our listeners. Thank you for the messages that y'all send us.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
it makes us feel so good. It really does.
And, you know, the case suggestions really help us out with, you know, not having to come up with the case on our own. But we love hearing from y'all, and we love that y'all take time out of your day to listen to us. So,
and the messages we get are like full length messages, like really heartfelt. I feel like someone took the time to really think about their message to us.
Yeah.
And it's just cool that we get to be a part of your life.
Yeah. So I am thankful for our listeners.
Yeah, me too. Okay, bye. No, I have to come up. I'm thankful for candles.
Yeah. Would you like me to light one?
You know what I'm thankful for? The little things. I think I've said this before, mm-hmm. like a blanket or whatever, but the weather's turning cold again.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, ooh, my fireplace, ooh, a candle, ooh, a sweatshirt.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
The coziness.
Thankful for cozy vibes.
Okay. I like it. Do y'all hear the sirens?
They're coming to get us.
All right. Well, we'll let y'all go. This was a long talk. So.
Thanks for hanging in there. This was great. Let's do it again sometime.
Okay. Let's do it.
Okay. Bye, guys.
Bye, y'all.
Bye. Bye.
Bye
now.
Bye. I'm like, oh, we're still going.
Bye. For real, bye.
Well, thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. If you're enjoying our podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating so that other true crime fans can find us.
If you have any case suggestions or just want to say hey, email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on Instagram, where we post case photos and information at Cousins on Crime Podcast.